Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful, rainy Thursday morning here in New York. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be with all of you this morning. I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Michael Schudel. He is the chef and owner of Conscious Kitchen, and I'll tell you more about the work he's doing here on Long Island. But before I do, I want to go over some things that are going on in and around the area, share my recipe with you, and talk about some things going on in the news. First off, last night I was at a wonderful fundraiser for Jumaine Williams. And if you haven't heard of him, you will be. You should check him out online because he is running for Lieutenant Governor of New York. And he's an activist like me. And he is really, a mover and a shaker. He is, you know, vowing to really be an advocate for all the things that we think are important: anti-fracking, good for the environment, good for working families, good for subsidized housing, good for food access, all those things that were important he talked about last night at this fundraiser. And I just think, you know, he will bring a lot of hope to New York and keep whoever we have in governor at the time in line. So think about supporting Jumaine Williams. Check him out online. He was a wonderful person to meet, and he is also a vegetarian. I was very happy about that. So we served up some barbecued tempeh, and I made those barbecued mushroom steaks that I shared that recipe with you last week. And we also made the vegetable curry quinoto that I've shared that recipe as well. So there was a lot of great vegetarian food as well as salad, and there were barbecue chicken wings for those that wanted that. And it was just a great time, and I'm really jazzed about meeting Jumaine Williams. So do check him out. Also, some things that are going on, as I'm sure all of you know, the Farm Bill is up for reauthorization. And every, 4 years, it's up for reauthorization. And right now, with the current administration, it's a really scary prospect in there because the House Agricultural Committee just passed a bill that would eliminate the Conservation Stewardship Program. And they've also added in the Conservation Stewardship Program that of farmers, or I don't like to call them farmers, ranchers, people who own concentrated animal feeding operations, also known as CAFOs, that they actually would be eligible now for their conservation payments. And that just does not seem right. That's an oxymoron. How can someone running a concentrated animal feeding operation qualify for environmental conservation? I don't think so. But anyway, we all need to become aware of the Farm Bill because the Farm Bill provides supplemental assistance for those in need for food access. It, is involved in what used to be known as food stamps. It's now called SNAP. But so many important decisions revolve around this Farm Bill, like subsidies to our local small farmers and farmers who want to transition towards organic. And conservation issues. We need to really put more of that into the Farm Bill and get away from the monoculture cropping that we are doing that is, causing such havoc on our environment. So if you don't know about the Farm Bill, look for it in the news. It's there all over the place, and we need to support it in any ways we can. There's petitions on my website that you can sign up for, but, just go online. Look in the paper. Farm Bill's really being talked about. And anything we can do to support good practices, we need to come together on. Brenton Smith, who was a guest on my show a few weeks ago, he's been in the news a lot with his seaweed and growing seaweed. And it's really exciting that more and more more and more people are becoming aware of the benefits of eating seaweed and how that can reduce the eating of seafood, and it can supplement that. And a guest I had on from Wicked Healthy, Chad Sarnow, he was talking about how they're actually making a mock seafood with seaweed and other legumes. So lots of exciting things are happening in the world of seaweed. And so keep your eyes open for that, and be open to trying it, because if we can all reduce the need for seafood in our diets, that would be really a step in the right direction. I also have petitions on my website to urge your representative to walk the talk. And I know you know that I was up in Albany a few weeks back for the Cuomo walk your talk, you know, about fracking. And I actually just got an email from Food and Water Watch that Governor Cuomo on record said he will not support any more fracking operations, which is a great thing. But he has been opposed to fracking supposedly in New York State, but hasn't been allowing all fracking infrastructure to come into the state, meaning the pipelines and the facilities to process the gas that comes from the fracking sites and the trains that derail and all that other stuff. So he went on record saying that he will not support any more fracking infrastructure. So that's a really big thing. We now just have to hold him to it. But anyway, I have lots of petitions on my website, and we need everyone's participation. I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, always comes out loud and clear. It certainly was present at last night's fundraiser, that we all have to step up to the plate and become involved. Politics is not something that I ever was really drawn to. But now, being a foodie and being in the food movement for so long, I realized to make change and to really change policies, we have to work through the system. And so we all need to become a little bit more familiar with it and do what we can and participate so that we can make the changes and help create the changes that we want to see happen. So please do your part. And now I'd like to share with you some things that are coming up in and around our area. It is springtime, and the rain is really coming on strong this week. So a lot of these things might be rain sensitive. So check them out. Make sure they're happening, rain or shine, if you do want to go. Tomorrow is a food truck rodeo at Grossman's Farm. Grossman's is one of the few organic farms in Nassau County. It is owned by the Nassau County Land Trust, and they are having a food truck rodeo, and all the proceeds go to preserving the farm and allowing it to continue to operate. And at the food truck rodeo, it's a big festival of lots of different small food purveyors, along with wine, craft beer. They'll have live music, hay rides, face painting, fun for the whole family. It's from 5 to 9, and it's in Malvern. So check that out. And that's just one of many. I think they have 3 or 4 planned for the summer. And I know last year they also got rained out a couple times. So if you want, give them a call. That's, again, Crossroads Farm. And also tomorrow night, Old Westbury Gardens is having a fun event. It's called Take Flight, Birds and Brews. And they have volunteers for wildlife coming on board to talk to us about bats and birds and the dangerous game of the predator versus the prey. And they will have seasonal beers featured from Blue Point Brewery there, as well as food. So check that out. You do need to get tickets in advance. So check out Old Westbury Gardens and get the tickets. Also, this weekend is the first of all summer long open house at Brooklyn Grange, but not at the Brooklyn Grange site in Brooklyn. It's at the Long Island City site. They have 2 rooftop farms, one in Brooklyn, one in Long Island City. Both are called Brooklyn Grange. And the Long Island City one has open houses every Saturday, and this is the first one. And it's wonderful. You can just go down. You don't need to make a reservation. It's a tour of their facility. They also have chickens and bees, so it's fun. And that does happen rain or shine. So the tour costs $15 Oh, I'm sorry. It's free, but they offer tours, and the tours are $15. So that's from 11 to 4 on Saturdays. This weekend is the New York City Vegetarian Food Festival, and it's your usual what you would expect at a food festival. There's chef demos, speakers, kids' activities, fitness classes, entertainment, and lots of vendors with delicious vegetarian food. And that's at the Metropolitan Pavilion all day, Saturday and Sunday. And tickets are $20. North Shore Land Alliance, which is an organization that I partner with the Long Island Food Coalition, and we're actually planning another conference for November, so stay tuned for that. But they are having, and they sponsor all season-long walks in the woods, and they're having one this weekend on May 20th at the Macomah Nature Reserve. And they have John Turner, who is expert in plant and wildlife, there to lead us on a great nature talk. But that is weather permitting, so if it's rain, it may be canceled. So you can call the North Shore Land Alliance to find out about that. Also on Sunday, and I'm not sure if this is rain or shine, there's a Chinatown herb walk with Ellen Kamai, who is also known as the natural nurse and another radio host on the Progressive Radio Network. But twice a year, she hosts a Chinatown herb walk, which is just a wealth of information. She has a wealth of information. She shares it with you and show you where to go to get all the different herbs that are typical and used often in Chinese medicine. And it should be fascinating. So I'm hoping to go this Sunday, if any of you want to join me. And I hope it doesn't get rained out. North Shore Land Alliance is also having a workshop on investing in conservation. And this evening will feature Lynn Scarlett, who is the Chief External Affairs Officer for the Nature Conservancy and Global Climate Strategy Lead and former Deputy Secretary. It's including cocktails, and dinner is optional. But that should be really interesting. Learning how to invest our money wisely is such an important thing. I've had, you know, we always are talking about divesting from fossil fuel companies, divesting from pharmaceutical companies that are pushing different drugs. I mean, there's so many different things that you want to invest in, and many things that you want to make sure you're not investing in. So this is a great opportunity to learn about that. It's in New York City. If you're interested, again, call the North Shore Land Alliance. And an herbal certification course is being taught also by Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. It's online, and it starts June 3rd is part 4 of this certification course that she offers, but you can take them in different orders, so it doesn't have to be consecutive. So you still can participate on June 3rd if you're interested in that. All these things, by the way, are on my website, so you can find out more information about them on my website. On June 9th, there's an herbal and edible walk at Restoration Farm, which should be wonderful. On June 10th, there is an online course about thyroid and adrenal pituitary information, and that it's called the Sacred Triune. And thyroid, adrenal, and pituitary all work together, and to learn more about that, there's an online course if you're interested in that. Also, Edible is presenting an industry city chef lab, and that's going to take place at Gramercy Tavern. It's at Innovation Alley, but the food will be featured by Gramercy Tavern, and there will be local chefs there, food, and whole culinary scene, and it's being sponsored by Edible Brooklyn, if you're interested in that. Change Food, which used to be the organizers behind TEDx Manhattan, they are having their second Change Food meetup. And that's on June 13th at Ag Tech X Collab in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So check that out. I'm planning on going to that, actually. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet others that are really working in the food network field. And this one is really going to be focusing on getting funding for some of your ideas that you may have. There's a farm-to-table dinner that's benefiting the Sylvia Center, taking place up at their farm at Catchkey Farm in Columbia County. And they do a wonderful job with this farm-to-table dinner. So tickets vary in prices. You can check that out online. And again, I don't want to take too much time right now to go into all the events. I just want to share one last one with you that's coming up, which is the Slow Food Nations in Denver, Colorado. You need to know that ahead of time because you need to get your tickets. But the first Slow Food Nation took place last year in Denver, Colorado, also in the middle of July, and it was just such a great time. There's so many chefs from around the country and some chefs from around the world that joined us there, and there were chef demos and cooking samples and lectures and parties in the street. It was just a lot of fun. So if you're looking for a great vacation this summer, that's something you should consider. And now let me share my recipe with you. This is early spring. We have our asparagus and sugar snap peas, garlic scapes, and so I want to share this recipe with you that takes all those into consideration. This is an asparagus, sugar snap pea, mango, and garlic scape salad. And it's really a light salad for warm weather. So we're waiting for the warm weather. We had a beautiful day this week, one, where it was really gorgeous, and it reminded us that really summer is right here. And spring is here, and summer's around the corner. So anyway, for this recipe, for the dressing, you need 1/4 cup of rice vinegar, 1/2 a lemon, 1/2 cup of olive oil, 1 teaspoon honey, 1 teaspoon of fresh chopped dill, and salt and pepper to taste. For the vegetables and salad, you need 16 asparagus stems, 2 cups of fresh sugar snap peas. You're going to de-thread those and then cut them into thirds. 5 garlic scapes cut into 2-inch pieces, 1 mango cut into cubes, 2 cups cherry tomatoes halved, 1/4 cup chopped dill, 1/4 cup finely sliced mint leaves, 3 tablespoons finely chopped red onion, and then 1 cup of toasted walnuts with 1 teaspoon of honey. And you're first going to steam the vegetables. I steam each one separately because they take a different amount of time to cook, but you can use the same water. So have a bowl of ice water on hand so that you can blanch them, which just stops the cooking immediately and locks in the flavor and the color. So you're going to steam each one separately, the asparagus and the sugar snap peas and then the scapes. And after you remove each one with a slotted spoon right into the ice water, take it out, and then once it's in the ice water just for a minute or so, you take it out and lay it out on a towel so that it can dry. So you're going to do that with all 3 vegetables and let that drain on the dish towel. Meanwhile, you're going to toast the walnuts in a cast iron pan just for a few minutes till you can start smelling the aroma from the walnuts. And then turn the pan off and add 1 teaspoon of honey just to coat the walnuts. And let that cool before you're going to add that to the salad. And then in the small mini food processor or a bullet or something like that, you're going to make the salad dressing. You can even use a jar and just shake it really well to emulsify it. But you're going to place the vinegar, lemon, olive oil, honey, dill, and salt and pepper all into the mini processor and just pulse it until all the dressing comes together. And you're going to toss the salad with 3 to 4 tablespoons of the salad dressing and mix that all up. Garnish it with the walnuts on top. And hold back the walnuts. If you're not going to eat it right away, you can actually make this salad a day or two ahead of time. I actually think it's better one day ahead of time and letting it marinate in the salad dressing for a day is really great. You know, the asparagus, the sugar snap peas, and the mango, they all stay looking really fresh. So it's not like some salads where it wilts. It just gets better. So you can make this a day or two before and then garnish it with the walnuts right before eating it so that they stay really crunchy. And that's it. Enjoy the recipe. If you do make it, of course, I'd love to hear from all of you. So feel free to touch base and let me know how you liked it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Michael Schudell. He's the executive chef and owner of Conscious Kitchen, which is a healthy meal delivery service here on Long Island. And Conscious Kitchen delivers healthy meals that are made with locally sourced and organic ingredients, and he delivers them in a wide local area. I'm amazed how far he will actually travel to bring you a really great meal. And so it's my pleasure to introduce Michael to all of you. Michael, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, I had the pleasure of tasting your delicious food at our last hurrah, the Slow Food North Shore's last hurrah of 2017, which was, I believe, was in October last year. And
yes,
you made some
yes.
delicious food for that. And I was really excited to have the opportunity to introduce you to the larger community here. Can you share with us where your passion for cooking first started and your passion also for the environment?
Well, I've been cooking for my whole life. I grew up cooking alongside my mother, and she was deeply committed to health food. She was an elementary school physical education teacher, and she really cared about health. But I also have always been, I've always cared about nature and the environment very deeply. And, I view this business as the synthesis of those two things, my passion for cooking and the environment. So, it's just been my whole life.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a little bit more about Conscious Kitchen and when
Sure.
you started that and how that came to be?
Sure. Well, I've been cooking as a professional chef for the last 15 years in the health food industry. And I just noticed that there was this deep need for delivered healthy foods, especially plant-based, especially vegan foods. We are becoming a society that, values convenience. And when it comes to delivered foods, there's just a huge gap in health food and vegan food. And so, I decided to form this business to meet that, but obviously because I care about the environment, anything that I did had to have an environmental component as well. And, working in the food industry, you see just how much waste there actually is. And so, we're really committed to reducing our environmental impact. The response has been tremendous.
Mm-hmm. And how do you reduce the waste? Like what systems do you have in place? And, I assume you don't pack your stuff in plastic. What do you pack it in?
Okay. Well, we do a number of things to reduce our waste. First and foremost, the easiest thing we do is just recycle everything that we possibly can. We also compost. Very few businesses do this. We compost all of our waste, which reduces our garbage tremendously. As far as packaging goes, we package items in a spectrum of different types of materials. We use bio-based plastics. We use compostables, things that are recyclable, things that are returnable, reusable. We encourage our customers to return any items to us that can be reused. So that helps a lot. We use a lot of organic produce, and we are predominantly plant-based, which, goes a long way to helping the environment as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I first met you, you had just decided that you were going to be all plant-based. And so I thought you were, and then I saw that you've actually brought back some meat and or chicken and fish. Can you share with us what changed or what happened? Were some of your customers complaining? What caused you to go from plant-based and then reintroduce the chicken and the fish?
Yeah, this is challenging. I'm not going to lie. This has been challenging for me as a business and also personally. I have had a change in my own life. I'm in the process of transitioning to being vegan myself. When mm-hmm. I first formed the business, there was a tremendous pressure to be 100% plant-based and be a vegan business. We actually, as you said, we took the business completely vegan for a period of time. And I polled our customers. And, what we determined was that you know, the overwhelming majority of our customers, our households that we deliver to, they are multi-diet households. Somebody might be vegan, somebody might not be vegan. They might be actively trying to reduce their meat and fish intake. I think that we can be sympathetic towards that and achieve common goals, and I can personally be sympathetic towards that. But my goal, my overarching goal is really to become 100% plant-based business. I just think we have to get there, and I don't think that we're there at the moment. But when we do use chicken and fish, we buy organic free-range chicken. We use pasture-raised eggs. We buy seafood that's in accordance with seafoodwatch.org's recommendations. And like I said, thankfully, the overwhelming majority of our sales come from plant-based products. But I would like to get there. Personally, you know, that's what I'm doing personally, and I'd like to take the business there as well. But I just don't think that we're there yet. I think we're too small of a business to really make that happen at the moment. And
And it's so, here on, you know, for those that listening that are not familiar with the market here on Long Island, I mean, you are spread out. It's not like the city where you have such a high density of people that you're bound to have enough people to support a vegan operation, you know. And so I get it. I've thought
true.
Of restaurants that, so many times. And, you know, a restaurant just recently opened here in Albertson that is a vegan Italian eatery, but they also have regular vegan food, I mean regular Italian food as well, because they realize to get a family in, you know, some people may be vegan, but the ones that want that chicken parmesan want that chicken parmesan, and if they want to bring that whole family in, they need to offer that for those that want the meat. So,
exactly,
you know, it's a business decision, but I went to this vegan restaurant to try it out, and I don't know if you've heard of it. It's I don't even know if they're using the Three Brothers name on Italian eatery. They've had a vegan pizzeria out in Farmingdale for years, and one of my interns had told me about it, and I had never been there. And then this opened, you know, close to me, and it's the first vegan restaurant that has opened. And so, of course, I went there, and everyone that was in the restaurant was there for the vegan menu, not for the regular Italian food, which I was really pleasantly surprised to see.
Right. This is a challenge. I'm not going to lie. In the city in Manhattan, you do have this concentration of a population. Out here, it's much more spread out, and we are exclusively a delivery service. And you know, like I said, our goal is to is for people to eat healthier, is to increase animal welfare, reduce our dependence on meat, and reduce our environmental impact. And I think that we can be a solution to that. But it is challenging. My fear is that, you know, the demand, even though the demand for plant-based foods is increasing and people reporting to be vegan is increasing, my fear is that what's happening is it's not necessarily going in the direction of healthy food. You can have a plant-based diet and still be unhealthy. And so, you know, we are more healthy, plant-based, and you see a lot of food cropping up, you know, vegan hamburgers and, like you said, Italian places, et cetera, where it's still some heavily processed imitation foods that are coming out.
Right.
Again, it's helping reduce animal suffering, so that's a positive. But I'm not sure it's necessarily a positive from a dietary standpoint. And so, we're trying to hit a wide market. And, you know, I think where we operate, you know, trying to go for a niche inside of a niche would be challenging. But I would like to get there, absolutely.
Right. You know, what you said is true. I actually think vegan is, you can be unhealthy and be vegan. But I think plant-based, at least in my mind, plant-based refers to plant-based, meaning the things that you're eating are mostly from whole, you know, from fresh, real food and whole grains and that kind of thing. So, Oreo cookies, we know, are vegan, you know. But
right, exactly. You know,
that's certainly
that's
not
exactly
going to be a healthy.
Yeah, sure.
Right, but plant-based,
absolutely.
I usually think of At least that's how a lot of the people in the, you know, who are pushing plant-based, that's how they're distinguishing it from vegan. You know, that plant-based is healthier, and vegan can be any type of imitation food that doesn't contain animal products. So,
right, exactly. I would agree with that distinction. I think also a lot of people are using it because they think that if you say vegan, you're going to scare people away, and plant-based is a little bit more inviting to people. It sounds a little nicer.
Yeah, right.
So there's a marketing strategy, I think, with that. But I would agree with how you're defining it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So can you share with us, how does it work? Do people just call and order the same day, or they order ahead of time? How does it work? Is there a minimum? That kind of thing.
Okay, so there's no minimum. We put out a new menu every single week. We have some specials, and then we have customer favorites that stay on the menu every single week. Our menu generally comes out on Friday for the following week, and people can order directly through our website. We allow ordering up to, I think it's 11 p.m. the night before. Some people, they choose to email me their order or call or text me their order, but most people will order directly through the website. And like I said, there's no minimum, and we deliver the next day between 5 and 8 p.m.
No minimum, and you deliver
no
between
minimum.
5 and 8. How can that work? Is there a delivery charge?
There is a delivery charge for certain areas. So we have a 30-mile delivery radius that covers most of Nassau County and western Suffolk. So the reason for no minimum is, my feeling is I want people to be able to try it and let the food speak for itself. I think that, you know, if somebody is, they just want to order one entree, we'll drive out there, we'll deliver it to you, you try it, you decide if this is a product that you want to buy, if you want to, you know, keep purchasing from us. And we find that most people do, and they end up spending more money. And, it's a pleasure for us to, you know, to deliver that food to those people. So,
I think you're also getting a great market, because from my experience as a chef, the people that have the hardest time cooking are the people that live alone. Cooking for yourself, when you're cooking for one, is challenging. One, you buy a whole head of broccoli and you're not going to eat a whole head by yourself, you know, so you eat, you know, a quarter of the head of broccoli, and then you you don't get back to the other rest of it and it goes bad, or, although broccoli lasts a long time, that might not be the best example, but you know what I mean. It's
right.
It's hard to cook for one person.
Absolutely.
You know, and
absolutely.
You know, you can certainly cook a larger amount and then have it for leftovers, but then you're eating the same thing 3 days in a row, and that's not fun either. So, I can see
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There are a lot of businesses that they do something similar to what we do, and they say, this is what we're going to cook on Monday, this is what we're going to cook on Tuesday and Wednesday. And we don't do that. You know, our menu is available our full menu is available every single day that you order. So it's more like a restaurant, but we don't have a walk-in location. And I agree. Most of our customers, they're very busy people. And when you're really busy and you don't have time to cook for yourself, the options that you have are just not healthy. And that's where we come in. You know, I like to say, we think, you eat. You know, let us do the thinking. You just enjoy the food, knowing that, you know, we're thinking about the health aspects of it and the environmental aspects of it. And, most of our customers are very busy, or they don't necessarily know how to start cooking healthy for themselves. They don't know how to start cooking plant-based. And, you know, we can help them with that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I'd love you to share with us some of your menus so we can hear some of the delicious food you're preparing. And everyone who's listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
PRN, the Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
My name is Renee with Back Vaccine Information Coalition, and our show is titled, What in the Cell is Going On? We will be revealing how vaccine toxins damage our cells, how to allow the body to heal itself, and how to protect yourselves from the drug company's agenda. Join us every Monday at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, to learn all you need to set yourselves free from the medical, military, and industrial cartel.
This is PRN.FM. Tune in anytime for the latest in progressive news and ideas. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Have you ever noticed how pathetic the mainstream news is and how it's biased, vague, and utterly devoid of any objectivity? Do you or anyone you know still believe America is a democracy? Well, I insist you tune into the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti right here on PRN every Friday at 4 o'clock. I'll explain how things truly are, like America is a veiled plutocracy, and I'll show you the evidence is everywhere. Once we remove the program bias and deception, our news outlets convey the scripted narrative of the deep state while distracting and dividing us. It's time to break the dichotomy of division so we can finally unite and remove these sociopathic plutocrats from power. Join me on the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Michael Schudel. He's the chef and owner of Conscious Kitchen, which is a wonderful delivery service bringing fresh, organic, mostly plant-based foods to our local community. Michael, are you with me?
Yes.
So right before the break, I was asking you if you could share with us a sample of your menus and maybe even some of your favorite dishes that your customers really love.
Sure, absolutely. I really love, cuisines from all over the world. So I try to highlight that in my menu as much as possible. I could just talk about some of the items we have on the menu this week. We have a Korean bibimbap, which is made with cauliflower rice. It's completely grain-free. So we use shiitake mushrooms, wilted spinach. I have a homemade gochujang sauce that we use. That's a very popular item. We also have a black rice teriyaki on the menu made with black rice, steamed vegetables, pan-seared tofu, and a homemade maple teriyaki sauce. We also do fresh juices. That's very popular. I have a ginger green juice. We use kale, cucumber, pineapple, ginger, and fresh lime.
Now, in your smoothies or juices, do you use organic?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
That's great.
We are almost
100% organic. Don't, and it makes me crazy when I think of drinking concentrated juice from vegetables that are, filled with, herbicides and pesticides.
Absolutely, absolutely. When I say we're almost 100% organic, there are just some things that I can't control. The organic produce market is still very volatile. There are things that don't get shipped. There are things that sometimes are not available. Sometimes the quality is not so great. But also, we purchase from local growers who are growing organically, but they might not necessarily be certified organic. I'm very transparent about the business. And so, I'm not going to say we're 100% organic and certified organic because, we have to source things from various places, but we are almost 100% organic.
Uh-huh. No, I get that. I'm in business too. So, and so sometimes you might not have the kale juice that week because you couldn't get the organic kale or you get an unorganic kale. I mean, everyone makes their own decisions in that area. But, and I also, like you, believe that if someone, if a farmer says organic or they're growing everything organic, but they don't go for the certification, I don't mind the government not getting that money. you know, as long as the people are doing the right thing.
Right. And then there's also, the component that, there is, a list of practices and things that USDA certified farmers can use. And some of the local growers that we use are not using any of those methods. A case can be made that in some respects that's more organic than some, large-scale USDA-certified organic growers. So they're super local. So, I would prefer to use them. And I'm talking directly with, people growing the produce themselves. So.
Right. That's great. What about desserts? Do you do desserts too?
Well, we have we don't really do desserts per se, but we have things like smoothie cups, dragon fruit smoothie cups. We do date bites, chia pudding, things of that nature. But we don't really do. I suppose you could have those things as dessert. I'm not really a dessert person myself. I would prefer to have, a piece of fruit, but I guess those would be considered, the more indulgent items on our menu. But a lot of people do tend to have those things for breakfast, but I suppose you could have it after your entree as well. We have, I have a signature gluten-free granola that's very popular. That tops some of our smoothie cups. We also sell that in bulk as well.
Mm-hmm. But no cookies or...
I think if I were to introduce, if I were to introduce some sort of plant-based, let's say cookie or brownie or whatever, it would have to be something very healthy. There would have to be a vegetable component to it. There would have to be beet in it or something. I don't think I would feel comfortable. Everything that we put on the menu, every business decision that we make has to satisfy, two questions: is it good for us, and is it good for the planet? So if I can accomplish, if I can answer yes to those two questions and still put in something, somewhat indulgent, then I will. But we haven't really expanded into that yet.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced as a sustainable business?
I think that probably packaging is probably the biggest challenge. As far as food packaging goes, there's just no really great options. There are better options than for instance, we use a lot of, I shouldn't say we use a lot of, but we use some PLA, which is polylactic acid. It's a bioplastic that is derived from cornstarch. And you'll see this a lot on the market now. And this is a packaging solution that, it's better than plastic, but it still has its problems. It's like every time I think that, I know a lot about a particular packaging solution, I'll do more research about it and realize that it's, complicated. I think that we need to start thinking about products and packaging. We need to start thinking about it, the end of its life. We're making progress on the front half, but we're not necessarily thinking about, the back end. So there's a lot of compostables coming onto the market. We use some compostables as well. But, in our area, there's no curbside compostable pickups. In other parts of the country, there is, but there's no municipal industrial composting that's happening right here. And so, that's a challenge. So where does this stuff end up?
Right, because a lot of the compostable paper products say, it's compostable in a commercial municipal composting thing, but not in your own compost.
Right, exactly. And so, all this stuff sounds great. And like I said, it's better than plastic, but it's not, if you were to, just leave it on the side of the road, it's still going to take, 100-something years to, biodegrade. It's going to be just as bad as plastic. But, it is recyclable. And that's another problem. It enters the recycling stream, these bio-based plastics, and then they have to be plucked out of the recycling stream. And not every single recycling sorting facility is equipped to pluck it out. Some of them have optical scanners that can take it out of the recycling stream. And some of it just gets kind of mixed with other plastic resins. And you know, that's a problem because it can contaminate plastic that is, you know, set out to be recycled. The other big problem we have is paper. The Wall Street Journal just published an article a couple of days ago detailing all the problems with paper recycling. And this is a big problem. And I'm worried that recycling is going to become, you know, a dirty word moving forward because of all this news. But the truth is we've become so accustomed to single stream recycling that all of our recyclables, all of our materials are becoming contaminated. And it's causing a big problem because now we have contaminated paper that previously would have been perfectly recyclable and reusable. And now nobody wants it. China doesn't want it. We can't get rid of it. The prices are plummeting.
Can you fill in my listeners to what you're talking about? Because those that did not read that article don't know what you mean by contaminated paper.
Sure. Okay. So what happens is, you know, paper pulp, paper products, they are generally recyclable, but they are not recyclable once they are contaminated with things like oil or food residue. What happens is they chop up the paper, picture paper pulp floating in water, and the oil rises to the top. It contaminates the paper. It can't be used anymore. And so it gets diverted to landfills. And what happens is now that we have single stream recycling where you have plastic and paper and everything mixed together, and people have become lazy. They don't rinse out their recyclables. So food waste ends up on the paper products, and it ends up in the sorting facility. They sort out the paper, they package it all together, and they ship it to China. And, you know, at some point China says, okay, this is too contaminated. They raise their thresholds, and it gets diverted to landfills, or, you know, they don't want to buy it anymore. And then it becomes, you know, it's not valuable. And so we need to think about the materials that we use. We need to think about increasing the value of those materials. You know, when you rinse out a plastic container and put it in your recycling bin, you are increasing the value of that material. You are increasing the likelihood that it's going to get recycled. You know, aluminum is a very good example. And I know aluminum can have a bad reputation, but over 75% of the aluminum that has ever been mined in society is still in use today. And the reason why is because it's extremely valuable. It's extremely easy to be recycled. It can be melted down and reformed an infinite amount of times. And it doesn't matter if it's contaminated or soiled. You know, we need to think about that. And but, you know, we do use some paper products as well. We use paper products that are made from 100% post-consumer waste. But again, we could also do better. You know, I'm planning.
Have you ever thought of charging your customers a deposit for like glass Pyrex and packaging everything in glass? And then
We do use glass, and our customers voluntarily return their glass to us, and so that's great. And, you know, I'm thinking about moving more in a direction of having more returnable items. It's a challenge for a couple of reasons. One, I don't necessarily know if a customer is going to be, you know, a repeat customer or not. I hope that
That's what I was saying. They leave a deposit, and then, you know, they don't get it back until they have returned everything. And but then you, of course, have to keep track of it.
Right, of course. So there's a logistical aspect to that. I'm not sure that the health department would be too keen on that sort of practice as well. You know,
they're
hurdles.
Fine if it goes through a dishwasher.
Yes, I think that, you know, they would have sanitation standards that would have to be abided by.
Sure,
but it definitely is an added business expense. It would pay off eventually if enough people participated in it. And, you know, I'm definitely looking to add more solutions of that nature into the business. But what I've learned is there's no real, you know, one size fits all silver bullet approach to this. It really, in certain circumstances, some packaging solutions are better than others. You know, like I said, I really think compostable is the future. The problem is just that, you know, we need to get more into the habit of composting on a larger scale. You know, we should have compost picked up, you know, at curbside everywhere, and municipalities should be composting. And so I really do think that that's the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then we have to get everybody invested in doing that. I mean, I live in an area where, I separate my recyclables, and then, you know, the garbage men come and they just throw it all into the back of the truck. And I have, of course, myself and many others have said things to them, and they say that they separate it out at the facility, which you were just mentioning before. And the reason they do that is because nobody else was separating, because we used to have separate pickup days for the recyclables. And they stopped doing it because people weren't recycling. It's like, what do we do to wake everybody up that this is a real issue for everybody? It's not only an issue that, you know, poor people have to deal with. This is an issue that, you know, is going to affect all of us. And how do we get people on board?
That is hard. It's a hard problem because people, I think we're very myopic. I think that we are just focused on what's immediately in front of us, and we don't necessarily see the large scale implications of our behavior. And so I think that you have to kind of lead by example. I don't think that anyone is actively seeking us out as a business because of what we do environmentally. I think that they're probably primarily focused on their health and dietary needs. But I think that the environmental component comes along for the ride. And maybe because of what we're doing, it gets people to think differently about what they're doing, and they can vote with their dollars. And I think by doing that, we can impart some change. And I think as long as we're moving the ball down the field and making progress towards our common goals, I think that's a positive. I think that's a plus. I don't think it's something that's going to be solved overnight, but I think people are starting to understand. We recently passed, just in my local town, a no plastic bag law, which is fantastic, and I support it. I bring my bags to the grocery store, and when I forget them, I'm kicking myself. I think small changes can have a huge impact if multiplied. There's a multiplicative factor here. But like I said, I think you got to lead by example. I think that we can. People get so used to living their lives in a certain way. And, we can talk all day long about, it's beneficial to do this, beneficial to do that. But I think sometimes you have to show people that it's not that hard to live more environmentally consciously and to make small changes and lead by example and show them that you can do these things and that we can run a successful business and be environmentally conscious and take the extra steps to do these things that other businesses are just not doing. They are just profit motivated at the expense of the environment. And that's not me, that's not me at all. For me, there has to be an environmental component. There has to be a greater purpose other than just profit. Obviously we're a business and we care about making money, but I'm not going to do it at the expense of the environment.
Good for you. I wish more business owners felt the same. I mean, the bottom line is an issue, but it is not the only issue. So good for you. Where do you see the future of the health food industry going? Do you think it's going to continue growing? Do you think it's going to flatten out? I mean, right now, certainly the plant-based food market and the organic food market is the fastest growing segment of the food industry. Do you think that's going to continue? What do you think?
I do. I really do. I think there's some positive developments. I think you're starting to see some price parity between organic foods and non-organic foods in certain areas, which is great. I think that if given the opportunity, if there was complete price parity, people would choose organic every single time. So prices need to come down, and I think they have been coming down for certain areas of the organic market. I do think that plant-based is increasing. I think that veganism is growing, absolutely. I think part of it is a little bit of a trend. I think some people are experimenting with it, and they'll probably end up going back. But, I think any movement in this direction is a plus, it's positive, it's progress. But again, as I was saying before, I am slightly worried that it's not necessarily in the health food direction, and still very heavily processed fake vegan products, as we were talking about. That does concern me a little bit. But I see it moving in that direction. At least I hope so.
Yeah. Well, that's why I always feel it's important. Like, I was going to this fundraiser last night for Jermaine Williams, and I heard that the menu she was, you know, the host was making barbecued chicken wings, and I was like, well, you know, and salad. And so there, you know, I saw a very familiar situation being set up where anyone who doesn't eat meat has salad for dinner, you know, and then they walk away going, right, I could never be a vegetarian. Well, how could you just eat salad, right? And that's something that people are always saying to me. So I was like, well, if I'm going to help you, I'm going to make some vegetarian barbecued tempeh and some barbecued portobello mushrooms, you know, so that the vegetarians have something else, you know.
Right.
And
right.
And they also then walk away going, wow, I could eat this. You know, I could have a barbecue and not have meat. And wow, you know, and I got lots of comments last night about, you know, people really being blown away by how good the tempeh was and the barbecued mushrooms. And, you know, that always feels good when you feel like you made a difference. You made someone realize, wow, I can not have the meat and still feel satisfied.
Yeah, I don't know how we've become so accustomed to, as a society, it used to be that meat was something that was kind of, you know, a luxury item. And now people have become so accustomed to, they have to have a meat or dairy product at every single
three
meal
meals
of the
a day.
Day.
Right.
And I don't understand it at all. When you can kind of create something that's vegan or plant-based, that's just as good, if not better, sometimes you see a light bulb go off in people's head and they go, yeah,
exactly,
this is great. I could do this.
Exactly.
You know, I'll give you a story from, you
no,
know,
well,
from
we're not
going
to have time for a story.
Oh.
I'm going to have to stop you. Believe it or not, we are just about out of time, and I want you to be able to share with everyone your website and how
sure
to get in touch with you. Can you do that?
Sure. Absolutely. Our website is ConsciousKitchenLI.com, and you can visit us on Facebook and Instagram at ConsciousKitchenLI.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'll share your information on my website as well. And, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's been great to have you on, and I love the work you're doing, and I'm right in alignment with you in everything you were saying. So God bless.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Everyone who's been listening, thanks for joining us, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. I'm a